Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Pacifica National Board Audit Committee meeting. At this moment, we do not have quorum, so we'll be going into a committee of the whole to discuss our next prospective auditor, and that will be done in executive session at 9:30 p.m. On the line with us, we have our CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, Bonnie Hicks, and our Controller, Ben Garcia, and of course, our diligent and reliable audit committee members. They are Mary Berg. Go ahead, Mary, if you could call.
Okay, shall I just take a roll here? I'm going to take minutes tonight because Jamie's driving. Jamie Ross, who is the
same. Our very capable chair is driving, so we want him to stay focused on the road.
Yes, please do. So, here's the role now. Nia Bediako.
Here.
Ambrose Lane.
Here.
Evelyn Bethune.
Here.
Jack Van Aken, are you muted?
I think you say he may go off and on.
Oh. Okay, but he was here, so... He definitely was here. Jamie Ross.
Hot water.
Jamie was on. He's driving, so I'll come back to him too.
I can hear him.
Don White.
Here.
Lisa Davis. Lisa Davis. Are you on the call?
No, I.
Lisa. Okay. Joe Gonzala. Ernesto Chico Justine, Jim Stotts, Carol Wolf is not here. She will not be here, is that correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
And Sandy Weinman. And then we also have Lonnie Hicks and Ben Garcia. And Nia, did you mention someone else who was on the call?
No.
Okay. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Okay. I think Lonnie, could you kindly open the discussion about the process of choosing an auditor and so forth, whatever pleases you?
Yes. I can barely hear you, Madam Chair, but yes. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Well, for those of you that don't have the proposal from Bruce Mayer. He's a audit firm at Wisconsin. So those of you that don't have the proposal, it is available, and maybe Ben can mail it out to you during the call. But I wanted to give what I see, at least, are some of the guidelines and the ways you look at an auditor. And I just want to do it real quickly. Because when we come on the call, you'll at least have some of the ideas. An auditor, first of all, we're a California foundation and a 501c3. So you do want to know the experience the auditor has with, in this case, a nonprofit organization, 501c3. And you want to know if they've had experience with a 501c3 of our size. As a nonprofit, we are in the top one percentile in terms of the size that we are. Most nonprofit budgets average between $500,000 and $700,000. We're $19 million, so we are a very large nonprofit and fall into a very special category. So experience with someone of our size does matter. Our complexity, we have five stations, and many auditors are used to a single site visit, and they audit from what normally might be called corporate headquarters. But we ask our auditors to visit at least one station, sometimes two, and do site audits. The other, aside from price, of course, you want to know hourly rates. You also want to know the schedule that a given auditor is going to ask prepared. That might be investment schedules. It might be issues around cash reconciliation documents, bank statements, check registers. The reason you want to know it is because how much work the internal staff has to produce as opposed to what the auditor will produce in the way of those schedules is something you do want to know. It makes a difference. You do want to know what the product of an audit will be. That is to say, what will that auditor produce for you? Normal products include the following. One is a management letter, where the auditor will give the board an idea of the issues or kinds of policies and procedures that he or the auditor may recommend. Another product for an audit will be to give the board a sense of the definition of materiality. Materiality is the auditor is telling you, I, in producing this audit, I was telling you that I found no significant deficiencies or no dollar discrepancies above a certain number. So you want to know what that auditor's definition of materiality is. You do want to know the client background at Pacific of an auditor, because we are a special case. Not only are we complex, but we are a particular culture. We're a progressive organization. We're particularly large. We're a national organization spread across the country. We have a large number of stringers that we sort of deal with. We have a large number of volunteers that we deal with. And we also have a Memsys system where we book pledges outside the accounting system and then import those numbers into the accounting system. So we have a good degree of complexity. Another product for an auditor is the 990 process. Some auditors will fold it into the overall cost of the audit. Some auditors will charge you separately for your 990s. We have special reports that we have to do for Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is a financial report which Ben can speak to. Some auditors will charge you extra for it, some will not. You want to know from an auditor clock time, because they may quote a given price, but they may charge you for clock time, which is, say, you call them up, they may charge you for that consultation time. You want an auditor that will stay out of politics. That's always very important at Pacifica, and I'm always up front and clear about it, because, as you know, a slight comment that an auditor can make, groups inside Pacifica will fight over for a whole year. And so auditors have to be sensitive to the political environment in the particular organization they're working in. You want to know how many hours the auditor plans for the audit. Aside from price, you want to know how many hours will it take to get the work done. And you also want to know who's going to be working on your audit. You want to know, well, am I going to get a seasoned auditor or a seasoned team, or am I going to get some of your newer people who will take more hours and therefore end up being more expensive? I never recommend hourly rates. Anyway, I always say we need an auditor with a flat rate, not hourly rates, because they can become easily inflated. You want to test an auditor's knowledge of the latest California law and audits, and there are, California's a special animal, has different kinds of requirements that both FASB and the state of California have imposed on audits in the state of California. All states are not the same in terms of how and what kinds of rules they have for audits. Disclaimer. You have to be very clear with auditors what their guarantee in the context of an auditor is. That is to say, what am I being guaranteed as a board member? This audit will tell me or won't tell me, or what is being certified here? The old language we used to use was certification. And so you ask a simple question, what is this audit certified? And that is to say, what does it guarantee to a board in the way of financial information? You do, of course, we have a special a product in terms of the Financial Policies and Procedures Manual, which is a codification of audit of internal accounting procedures that we hope to have applied to all stations across the board. And if this auditor won't know about it, our previous auditor or the one we've used before does know about it. It was his suggestion that we codify some of that stuff. Anyway, I hope that's not too much stuff. And then you want to know from the auditor performance. You're not asking him to grade your finance staff, but you're asking him to see how responsive that finance staff has been, how well they've been able to provide the information. And the last thing you want to do with an auditor is you want to audit the auditor, which is to say you want to know how do you work, what are your procedures doing an audit, and how thorough are those procedures, and how reliable are they. There's more than one way to do an audit. You can do what's called an organization-wide audit, which is, covers the entire organization and its environment. Or you can do audits at various levels of precision. Sometimes those levels of precision include sampling rather than looking at every single account. Some people imagine auditors look at every single account and every single line item, but it's not expensive to do that, and most auditors don't do it. But they do sample. They sample payroll. They sample bank statements. They sample check registers. They sample investment accounts. They sample cash accounts. They sample petty cash accounts. They look at all those accounts, first of all, to see whether they're in overall balance. So if there's an out-of-balance situation, of course, that's going to invite further investigation. But they also sample to see if you can produce the documents, if your record keeping is adequate enough to produce the documents more or less on demand. And they also want to see the state of those documents once they have them in hand. And they will, in the initial visit, they will Xerox everything you have. And then they'll come back later on to see if you change anything. They don't give you time to prepare. They're there 15 days after the close of September 30th. And they 15 days later, they want a sample of everything. So there's no time to make adjustments, so to speak. And they're going to get the real close state of the organization. And then last of all, their products will include a balance sheet, a 990, a income statement, or what we used to call a P&L, and a cash flow statement of cash activities, which is a way of trying to show the board how monies that were thrown out by the operation were spent. That is to say, what cash came in and what cash went out. Anyway, that's a lot, I know. But that some parts of that may strike you, and you might want to probe deeper in terms of an auditor. So anyway, that's some of the things that we in finance look at an auditor, and that's kind of what we at when we ask those questions. That's what we're trying to get at. Okay, sorry to go on so long.
This is Evelyn.
Yes.
Go ahead, Evelyn.
It would have been great for you to have sent us that in writing. however, I understand what you were saying. But, you know, it really would have been great to have gotten that in writing. And as for the proposal, I haven't seen it. It's not in my email.
I posted it to the group.
Okay, can you resend it? I don't have it.
Okay.
Thank you.
These are the same points I went over, by the way, on the last call with a previous auditor. They're the same points. So, but I can do an outline on them if you like. But I
to go over them, Lonnie, with people who may not be fully aware of what you're talking about doesn't mean anything. It really helps to have them in writing so people can look at them and kind of mull over if they have any questions as to what is this or what does that mean.
Yeah.
I am going to send them. I'm going to resend it, I mean, right now. Did everybody else get the proposal? No, yes.
It may have gotten stuck in some of these ED search stuff that I have because I've got 1,000 of those,
no
too.
No problem. It's very easy for me to do it. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Ben, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, just adding just to the CPB portion of that. And again, the auditor, well, in this case, Sergey Ross, we do the CPB financials at the end of the year after the audit is complete, and I complete the financials for that, taking the information from the audited financials and putting them onto the CPB reports for each of the stations. Ross needs to come in after I'm completed doing that and review the entries that I made to make sure they comply with his or they reflect what his audited financials are, because we upload those audited financials to CPB for the stations, and again, CPB doesn't just look at my okay on that or Lonnie's and Greg's. They also look at Ross's approval, if you want to call it approval, or sign-off on the financials for the CPB. So he looks at them and says, yes, they in conformity with what I have audited. So, again, that's another step in which the auditor has to go. He steps back into the picture after he's done the audited financial statements and it is complete. He has to go back and look at the CPB financials and audit, and then again approve, sign up on those.
Well, one point of clarification.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, the points I just made are what I, as CFO, look for in an auditor. So, but that's not what necessarily an audit committee is going to be looking for. So let me clarify that. I gave my list of what I look for in an auditor. Now, if we were to turn to the three major points that an audit committee, I think at least, should look at for an auditor. It's not as complicated as the stuff I was just outlining. Well, the first thing you want from an auditor is to know what are the assurances that paying money for an audit or for an audit gives to you as a board member or as a member of the audit committee. And that's what I meant by certification. What are you getting for the audit? Not only the products, but the issues around, as an auditor, how can I be assured that these accounts, if you're so stating, are in order? That's really one of the central questions for any member of the audit committee. And let the auditor tell you what assurances and certifications he will provide. The second major component for an auditor is you do want to know the products of the audit. Though that's the second major area that I think the audit committee ought to stress. That is, what am I getting in the way of concrete products? That is to say, a management letter, balance sheet, cash flow statement, P&L, so that the board members can be assured that they can read and understand the materials that will be produced by that audit. That is the second area. The third area for the audit committee is areas of correction. Because you do want to know, okay, you've done the audit, and you've given me the certifications. I see what products you're planning to produce. But what is the way in which you will provide for us corrections and suggestions as a member of the board? You want the auditor to tell you what needs to be done after you, as an auditor, have looked at these books. And you're not fishing for problems, but you are wanting that auditor's impression of what next steps may be needed, where policies, procedures, ways to tighten up internal controls, what the board itself can do around managing expenses, how does this audit and the state of the financial health of this organization compare this year to what it's been last year, and that sort of stuff. So you want, from an auditor, a sense of next steps and the goal of creating financial solvency for the organization. Those are the three areas, as an audit committee, I would suggest that you...
Lonnie, may I mention something, too?
Yeah.
I think availability, too. I mean, again, in what Lonnie was saying is that the auditor is there for you to call as a chairperson. It doesn't have to be each individual a person on the audit committee, but for the audit committee going through the chair to ask Ross or Ross coming online with you when you are having a meeting sometimes to answer questions or things like that about the audit. You know, and that's important, too, is to make sure that he's there when we call him from the office if we have any questions on just things in general that happened during the year, and you calling him if you have any audit questions.
After the audit.
Yes. Or even before the audit, again, just availability, being able to, again, be there for the audit committee to answer questions without being, you know, nickel and dimed.
nickel and dime. And these days, specifically, nickel and every dime, right? We want to make sure that we hold on to our nickels and our dimes.
Yes.
Now, also, I know we mentioned this last week, but for those people, for those listeners who weren't, who did not tune in, and for any member who's here this week, when they go to different stations, how long do they usually stay? How long should we expect them to stay? And how thorough do they go through the books?
Yeah, and Don White has a question, too.
Okay, Don.
I think that's a very good question. How long do they stay? And I'm just a question for Lonnie. In the three that you laid out there, is this one involved there? Because in my signal area, this is one of the questions they have for a station audits. Does the auditor each time look at the procedures, processes, and the financial programs in place to guarantee against irregularities? That is to say, checks and balances and who's in charge of what at what time and so on. So I'm just wondering if what you've described also is a responsibility of the auditor to make sure that the processes and procedures and programs in place guarantee the maximum protection of the foundation's resources there.
Well, that's a good question, Don. And actually, today's auditor doesn't guarantee that there are no issues in terms of procedures and policies at any given entity or station. That's what I was trying to clarify. What they do guarantee, and this is all auditors, by the way, is that the procedures that they do audit and sample are adequate and that there are no material discrepancies. That is to say, that's why the definition of material is so important. They're not guaranteeing that there are no problems. They're just saying there are no major problems. And major is defined in terms of audit lingo as material. And last time, the last person we interviewed did define material for us, so we want to ask this auditor that same question. And what an auditor is saying to the board or anyone else, and I'll answer the question how long they're there, is that they're saying that we've examined the procedures in this station. We've examined the books in this station. And we think that the procedures are adequate, and here's how they can be improved. And that's why we went through this whole financial policies and procedures manual, and that is part of what that is going to accomplish for us. He's made his recommendations, and he's embodied them in, as we have, in the financial policies and procedures manual, so that all stations can improve their internal controls to move closer toward that goal of guaranteeing that there are no major issues. And the second thing, and so what they do in an ongoing audit is he will be there usually looking at two or three specific issues, and they're always related to financials. He'll check the petty cash and certify that there are no issues. Why cash? Because cash is always a vulnerable area in any organization where cash is being handled. And he'll check the books, so to speak, in terms of whether the bank statement balance, whether the P&L account makes sense and balance, whether the payroll, the pension, and if there are any investments for that station balance. Now, they do it not only with site visits, but they also do it from the records, of course, we have at the national office. So they audit both first at the national office, and then they'll go to the station. They rotate through all the stations. They always do generally WBI because our auditor, that's the one we've been using, is in New York, so it's convenient for them to do WBAI. And then they've done, Ben, who did they do last year? They did Houston, right?
Yes, I think they did Houston. Well, we also, when they come to office, sometimes we will go down to KPFA. Definitely go next door to KPFA because it's right near the office.
To KPFA, and they do the California stations while they're out here. And sometimes it'll be at our request, and sometimes it'll be at their request. They're working their way through various components of station's finances. Last year, they were concentrating on KPFA, on the MEMSIS system. It is a system that is used to book pledges and checks that come to the station. And out of that came a lot of suggestions for financial policies and procedures, now in the financial policies and procedures manual. So it's an ongoing process. Each year they come and they'll look for ways to improve what we have. So I hope that answers your question. So we do want to know what is materiality for a station. Now, we have at Pacifica created somewhat of an anomaly, in as much as the stations own their own bank accounts. We don't control station bank accounts. Stations, as a part of the take-back procedure, want a control of their own finances and their own bank accounts. So it makes it more difficult to monitor. And there's always that balance between local autonomy and national need for verifying the finances of the network. So that means we do have to go to the stations more because that's where the original documents are, the original finance documents. Most of them are not at the national office. They are at the stations. So that's why the auditor has to go there to look at the original documents more and more as we evolve this this democratic Pacific.
And just as a basic thing added to that, Lonnie, is that we do a confirmation for every single bank account that is for all the stations and for the national office. We do a confirmation requesting the balance that they're showing on their books with the statements that we have and what we show on our books.
That's important to define what confirmation is. Why don't you do that, Ben?
Confirmation is we confirm with the banks that what we say we have on our books at the end of say 9/30, that's our fiscal ending, that it coincides with what they have on their books, barring any outstanding checks, things like that. But we verify through a process where we fill out the confirmation, but they have to be sent out through the auditor to the bank, and the banks have to in turn send those back to the auditor. They do not flow through us. They, again, it's a process between the auditor and the financial institution, verifying what is on their records, and then the auditor seeing that what we have is on our bank reconciliation and our trial balance for that account.
Oh, that's also
all cash accounts.
That what also happens is, say a station says that they paid $500 for a new piece of equipment. In an audit, what happens is the auditor will send a letter out to the vendor and say, did this station buy $500 worth of equipment from you, and was the bill paid? That's part of the confirmation process. So we don't take numbers on a page at face value. We have an independent checking system that verifies not only accounts, but the vendors and those accounts. Because you don't want dummy accounts being set up.
Correct.
And so there are a number of steps that we take around that process.
And in that process, any asset that is purchased, we before the auditors get here, we have to have a copy of the invoice and the transaction that went through, for any asset purchase, which the auditor has to look at, and then again can do a confirmation on, again, to, like Lonnie said, follow through with that.
And every vendor gets a letter. Every transaction that's traceable to a concrete vendor, a letter goes to those folks, attorneys, vendors.
Attorneys, yep.
People that we buy office supplies from. And that's the double check to make sure these books actually reflect transactions and real vendors and real accounts.
I have a question. Does anybody else have a question? Okay. Lonnie, does the auditor do any checks and balances in terms of any type of offshore opening of accounts? For example, let's say KPFA. Can somebody go to another state and open a KPFA? I don't know what the titles of these bank accounts are, but do they check for that? Pardon?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Do they do a search like that?
Well, yeah, I was sort of alluding to it. Say if the auditors look at a bill, and that bill is a vendor based in the Caribbean, that will be immediately set aside for further investigation. If there's any offshore transaction, auditors will generally look at it. And we do have some. We do have, you know, business interests with, say, vendors in the United Kingdom, for example. Some of our transmitters we bought from there, and some of them from Italy, too. But those are looked at and verified. The invoice will be looked at, the vendor will be sent the letter, and perhaps a follow-up phone call. The bank statement will show where the cash actually came from our bank account, and the goods were actually delivered and were received. So that's more or less routine for almost any auditor. That's what they do, is they verify what numbers on a page. They look behind that and make sure that those represent real transactions, real dollars, real cents, and then where they see a need to improve what we call internal controls, they will recommend it, and then we follow through on it. So Pacifica's in the process of being 3 or 4 years old in terms of being able to set up new procedures. The old procedures under the period of turmoil fell apart. 5 years ago, Pacifica was on the verge of serious financial difficulty, indeed close to bankruptcy. And the auditor more or less said so. What was needed was to rebuild the accounting system in Pacifica. The accounts were not being kept orderly, not being kept timely. And that has had enormous implications as we try to rebuild Pacifica's finances over these last 5 years. What do I mean? I'll shut up after that. What do I mean? Well, people were not booking revenue. Dollars were being sent to third parties that was trying to keep it away from the then existing board, which was taking funds and using it for other purposes. So, but the accounting system suffered. Monies didn't come through the normal accounts. Transactions and items were paid for by cash. So there was not a record. You had situations where the books were not being kept, where enormous debt was generated, where pension plans were not kept up to date. And we've been doing, in the last 3 years, rebuilding not only the finances of Pacifica, but the accounting systems in Pacifica. And we've had over that time period, a great auditor who's helped us do that and move the network back to financial solvency. So this is where we, this is just to give you a sense of where we stand. This has been an organic process of systematically building the system and bringing them back to par.
One thing that I think we had forgotten during the process of doing the policies and procedures manual, now that election time is here, understand that what they do is they take these lists and the local and the national election supervisors, what sort of verification do they do with the lists? And I think somehow there should be something in the policies and procedures manual about that. Because are these things reconciled anywhere between the number of listeners we say we have and the receipts and so forth?
Well, yeah, I was alluding to that earlier, but there are two or three different things in verifying lists. And some of them are directly related to accounting, some are not. Let's do the ones that are directly related to accounting. When a person makes a pledge, say I'm doing an on-air drive, that pledge is memorialized inside what we call the MEMSIS system. That is sort of a donor system. It's not the accounting system, by the way. It is a separate system that exists at the system where all pledges are booked into the MEMSIS system, and that system is run by a personnel at the station who is not in the accounting department of the station. That pledge system identifies the amount, the pledge, and that a list is generated in that way. Once the my dog is starting to bark. Once those pledges are done, our auditors come in, and we do it at various times as well. And we look at the amounts pledged and compare it to the actual cash received. And the auditor, that's what you're suggesting, looked at the reconciliation of the pledges as the pledge system would have before it goes into the accounting system. It's verified each month that you have real numbers, real transactions, real pledges, real donors, and real pledges. Then, of course, it takes 3 or 4 months for those pledges to come in, that is, the checks. And then
that's
done every month. But at the end of the year, a full-fledged audit on those systems is done.
And that's in the policies and procedures manual. I guess I can't remember all those things that are there, but that's in the policies and procedures manual?
It's done, but you're right. Maybe we need to have a line or two where there is a reconciliation of a MEMSIS system and the accounting system. The auditor does it. We need to maybe have it in the policies and procedures manual as well.
We try to mention that though in the business manager's reconciliation of the report that they get from their MEMSIS people as far as the pledges they were received and the monies that they were received, and again having them reconcile the cash portion of that to the MEMSIS system and what is actually being put in as pledges the monies received.
It is in the current policies and procedures manual that this reconciliation shall take place, and there are procedures around how it should be done. So it is there in these current policies, but we could add a line or two. It wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to say this is Lisa. I'm on the call. I was in a dead zone before, and I couldn't call in.
Okay.
You're right.
Does anybody have any questions? And Evelyn, are you still with
me? Yes, I am.
Did you get the document?
Not yet.
Really?
Where are you sending it?
I'm sending it to the audit committee listserv.
Could you maybe just send it to my email?
Directly. Okay. All right. I just see where you wrote to me, so I'll forward it there. Not a problem.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions before we go to the executive session at 9:30?
Well, Neil, I want Mary Berg. What documents
ahead,
did you send the proposal I got? You send something else?
I sent the proposal that Lonnie sent out to me. Yeah, I had asked if everybody got it, and Evelyn said that she did.
Okay.
Only thing I could think of, maybe the file is so large. Now,
it's in the list, sir.
I got it.
You got it?
Send it to me, yeah.
Okay,
I think
great,
I did.
Great. Okay.
Did you just send something to me?
No, I didn't send it. I was just looking forward to forward it to you. But did you get it now?
Oh, nope.
Nope.
That's what I just sent to you.
All right, I got a copy
of that.
No problem. Okay, I'll do it now.
Yeah, send it to my email, too.
Oh, so, okay. All righty. I'll do, in the meantime, I'd like to say, does anybody have anything else that he or she would like to add? Subtract? Okay. So we'll say goodnight to our listeners. Thank you very much. And we'll be going into executive session. And I'm sure that you will be able to hear who Pacifica's auditor will be within the next week or so. Thanks so much and continue supporting us.
Do we need an executive session number, Madam Chair? Now, we don't want to give it on the air, but does everyone have it?
No.
No.
I don't have it.
No.
We'll use the number that we use for this.
Okay.
Okay.
Just use the same number.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Okay. All righty. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.